This is your old friend Maria Vasquez Boyd here for ArtSpeak Radio. I want to welcome you today, our listeners who are tuned in online at www.kkfi.org or listening through your phone, your radio app on your smartphones, because they're really that smart. And of course, if you've tuned into 90.1 KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio, you know that this is ArtSpeak. We have some wonderful guests in the studio today. We have Castor L. Hornmarsh from the Kansas School of the Deaf. We also have Sherry Gable, who's the bilingual assistant ASL tutor and teacher from the Kansas School of the Deaf. And also Takako Kearns, who is the art teacher there at Kansas School of the Deaf. And we also have Sandy Kelly, who's an educator for over 30 years with the School for the Deaf, and now she's the director of the Deaf Cultural Center. On our second half of the program, we have author-writer Patrick Dobson to talk about his latest novel that follows up his story, Seldom Seen, that he wrote a few years ago, and we'll be talking to him about in the second half of the program. Now, I'd like to introduce Castor L. Hornmarsh, who graduated from Avalo University with a BA in English Education and an MA in Deaf Education from the University of Kansas. He is a high school language arts teacher at the Kansas School for the Deaf in Olathe, Kansas for 7 years before becoming the bilingual specialist. He is also an AEBPD bilingual mentor in his eighth year at Kansas School for the Deaf. He taught ASL courses in the Foreign Language Department in Lawrence Public Schools for 7 years prior to the Kansas School for the Deaf, as well as at the University of Kansas for 4 years. Now, he's also a freelance interpreter and works for Forensen as a video relay interpreter. He is an OCODA with 2 deaf children and 3 hearing children, and he enjoys farming, camping, kayaking, and hiking. And finally, he has co-written an article called Bilingual Students Publish Works in ASL and English. So I want to welcome Castor L. Hornmarsh. Hello, my friend. It's good to see you again.
It's nice to see you too, Maria.
Terrific. You know, we have so much to talk about today. We have Sandy Kelly again, like I said. She's the director of the Deaf Cultural Center in Olathe. Welcome, Sandy.
Welcome. I'm pleased to be here.
Terrific. And next to her is Sherry Gable of the Kansas School of Deaf and Takako Kearns. Now, they both organized a youth art competition at the school, and I believe this was the first year, right?
Yes, indeed.
Okay. They launched a new national youth art competition for DEVIA, which is Deaf View Image Art at the Kansas School for the Deaf, and they also partnered with the DCC, the Deaf Cultural Center in Olathe. So let's talk about what that competition is about. So would you like to begin, Sandy or Kester?
I think I'd like to hear from Sherry and Takako.
Sure.
And this is Sherry speaking. You know, there are quite a few deaf artists nationally who are deaf, but there's a lot of different types of artwork. But DEVIA is a special kind of artwork that describes the deaf experience with deaf culture, language, and history, all inclusive. And we had a vision of teachers, deaf teachers, teaching deaf students to increase their pride in creating artwork related to their own experiences. And now Takako is speaking. Chuck Baird is a KSD graduate who is the father of DEVIA, and he had a dream. And his dream was to keep alive through future generations this type of artwork or this art style. And a few years ago, yes, it was 2 years ago, we had a DEVIA workshop of national professional artists, and their dream was to set up a national competition. And so 2 years later, here we were ready to set up this art competition nationally.
So DEVIA was created in 1989, and what is the importance to the deaf community and the students at your school? When you began this competition, was there sort of a light bulb moment where the kids were so excited or just uncertain.
And this is Sherry. Like I said, with deaf art, there is general art typically that deaf people produce. And for many years, that was the way it was. But DeVia is a specific type of art that's related to the language or culture or history of deaf people. And so our young kids typically draw or paint pictures with hand shapes involved. So, for instance, if they were to draw an elephant, they would draw or paint an elephant with the hand shape describing the trunk of the elephant. And hearing people typically wouldn't understand these types of artworks. But for deaf kids, it really shows how they cherish their language. And Takako speaking, as an art teacher, there are a lot of young deaf children who have artwork inside just wanting to get out. And so all I do is kind of lead them in the direction. So, for instance, like if we look at a butterfly, the sign of butterfly, and then they will want to paint pictures of butterflies with hands on them. A lot of kids will have poetry inside, drummed up through their life experiences that can come out through paintings instead.
I do want to tell our listeners that for more information about DeVia, you can find out about their manifesto and view the works of art. The website is www.deafart.org. So if you want to take a look at what we're discussing today, you'll see the range of work, some complex, some very abstract, but it will give you a better understanding of what we are talking about today. I know that Chuck Baird was mentioned, and he played an important part at the Kansas School for the Deaf. So his contributions played a large role in this competition. So what can you talk about the theme of the competition this year at the school?
And this is Sherry. We didn't have a specific theme, but we did want to talk about remembering Chuck Baird.
He's passed away.
Of course, the next competition, we might have a specific theme. Yes, Chuck Baird died on February 10th, 2012, and he was almost the age of 65. He passed away from cancer, and this is Takako speaking. We don't really have a theme because we want the artists to be able to freely express themselves through their art. So it's a lot easier for artists to express themselves and to send us their artwork without a theme. We had 152 pieces this year, and we were really thrilled with that turnout. And we had six different states participate. One state even had a school where deaf kids were mainstreamed with hearing kids. And, you know, a lot of these kids don't have experiences with DeVia, but we do provide a lot of artwork for these kids to view and kind of gain an understanding of what type of DeVia style this is. And we do offer a DeVia curriculum across the nation, which we started last year, and that will be offered again this summer to help advance DeVia curriculums within their art departments. And hopefully more schools will offer that within their art programs.
Well, there are certain guidelines for this competition that you worked within. Was there a particular size, or did it have to be framed and unframed work? Can you talk about that?
And this is Taco. As far as size, this year we decided we needed to stay within the realm of 11 by 14. There was a category of 2D art. There was photography art, graphic design, and I think that's it. We also had categories of age levels. We had K through first grade, second through third, fourth through fifth grade. And we had middle school category and a high school category.
So with so many submissions from other schools, did you have – I'm going to ask, who judged the art for this contest? Was it local folks?
And this is Sherry speaking. We had three judges. Two were from out of state. One was Ellen Mansfield, who is a professional DVR artist from Pennsylvania. Or actually, it could be Maryland. she creates pictures for book titles, and she makes lots of murals across the country. Mm-hmm. And then our second judge was Nancy O'Rourke. She's from Colorado, and she also is a professional DVR artist. She's very well known throughout the country within the deaf communities. She trains teachers. She gives workshops for children. And the third judge was local, Earlene Hicks, and she's an avid artist. She has a background in judging. She judges lots of contests. Mm-hmm. And it was just those three judges.
It must have been very difficult when you have that many submissions for art. It must have been very difficult. If you would like to share with our listeners the winners, the first and second and third winners of each, I'm sure they would be thrilled to know that their names were announced.
Okay. It was overwhelming to have so many submissions, but we had the judging occur online. The judges could go ahead and do that at home. Yeah. And they viewed it online and picked the winners from that. For kindergarten through first place was The Hand Shape of Fish. And this is from Kansas School for the Deaf. And the winner is Allie Brown. At grade second through third grade, first place, was the title Eye of Hands. And this is from Wisconsin School for the Deaf, Leela Chapin. And then grade fourth through fifth, we had first place of Alicia Arispe from Wisconsin School for the Deaf. And this was a self-portrait by this student. And she was signing her name sign. For middle school, first place, Molly Bracken, and the title was Asleep. And this is from Wisconsin School for the Deaf also. And the high school category, first place, was from also Wisconsin School for the Deaf. This was Teresa Baumgartner. And the title of her piece was Swaying Candle. Okay. And then the high school category for computer-generated art, first place was from Kansas School for the Deaf, Renata Rose, and her title was Magic Hands.
Terrific. Congratulations to all the winners. Terrific. Now, the work itself, is it being exhibited at the Deaf Cultural Center or soon will be, Sandy?
Yes, I think that's the plan. I'm just waiting for Takako and Sherry to be able to bring over the work so we can have it on display, and we're anxious to have it there so people can come and see it.
And for our listeners that have tuned in, we're talking to educators and a bilingual specialist from the Kansas School for the Deaf at 450 East Park Street in Olathe, Kansas. And also we have Sandy Kelly from the Deaf Cultural Center, and that's at 455 East Park Street. Sandy, let's talk about the Deaf Cultural Center. For visitors that come into the center, and it's open Tuesday through Friday from 10 to 4 or Saturday 10 to 3, What will they see?
Well, for one thing, we have an outstanding museum. It's absolutely wonderful. And that's just part of what we do at the Deaf Cultural Center. Mm-hmm. So we have the museum. We also have outreach programming, and we provide information, resources, and referrals for anybody who might have questions about any level of hearing loss. Mm-hmm. It's very interesting because just recently I was talking with an individual from Washington, D.C., who commented that the Deaf Cultural Center in Olathe, Kansas, is the only public Deaf History and Deaf Cultural Museum in the United States. There are a lot of museums, deaf museums, but they're connected with schools. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. we're the only one that is actually a standalone.
Right. You're near the campus of the Kansas School for the Deaf, but you're not incorporated into the institution
And that is very confusing to people uh-huh. because we're right across the street, so people assume that we're part of the school, but we're not. We're separate.
So what are some of the events things that happened at the center that involve community?
We offer sign language classes mm-hmm. for folks. Mm-hmm. We also have some really fun events. We have a monthly patio party where people can come and learn stories about artifacts from the museum. We mm-hmm. do that once a month. We also try to highlight local deaf artists, mm-hmm. and we do this once a month during the morning. We have an event called Morning Mingles, and all of this information you can find on our website at www.deafculturalcenter.org.
Terrific. Now, when you get the work from this competition, will you have a reception or sort of an awards ceremony? What's going to take place?
Well, I think what we're going to do is actually have this be part of our morning mingles.
Ah, terrific.
And so that way we can introduce it to people that show mm-hmm. up, but then it will be on display for at least a month mm-hmm. at the center.
And will folks be able to meet the artists at this time and maybe talk, or will they be able to talk about their work, sort of their ideas
and that's exactly what our plan is.
Good.
Unfortunately, we cannot fly the Wisconsin folks in. I wish we could.
Yeah.
Maybe in the future. But hopefully the students from the Kansas School for the Deaf will be able to come over and explain their work and talk about the competition.
Are there plans for the artwork to travel elsewhere, like maybe in some of the schools that competed for this competition?
Takako speaking. Uh-huh. Actually, no. We want people to view the KSD homepage, ksdeaf.org, and click on that the DeVia icon, and then they can view all the winners from all the different categories there. And this is Sherry speaking. Each school who has winners, they can have their own award ceremonies mm-hmm. for them mm-hmm. and recognize their artwork, and they're more than happy to do that. And, of course, we'll send the awards, the certificates, for them to be able to do that at this time.
Terrific. You know, we're going to take just a real quick break. We've got some underwriting, and we'll be back with Kester and Sherry and Sandy and Takako.
Supporting 90.1 FM, the KC Clay Guild, where you can participate in glazing your own pottery at their Raku Night fundraiser on Saturday, May 9th, starting at 4:30 until 10 p.m. You will get a finished mug and a piece you glaze and they fire. Raku Night includes food and live music from the Kansas Swamp Band at the KC Clay Guild, 200 West 74th Street, Kansas City, Missouri. That's May 9th, Raku Night. For more information, including adult and children's classes, kcclayguild.org.
The American Friends Service Committee's Move the Money Listening Project heard from 46 different community leaders discussing community needs, budgeting and tax cutting, military spending, and better priorities for our community. Ira Herrett will highlight that project's findings and discuss ways we can shift the debate from austerity to investing in our future on this Wednesday's All Souls Forum at 6 p.m. right here on KKFI.
This is Art Speak Radio. I'm Maria Vasquez-Boyd on 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. We're talking to members of the Kansas School for the Deaf. I've left all your names at my other desk. We have Kester Hornmarsh. We have Sandy Miller.
Kelly.
Close. I have Takako Kearns and Sherry Gamble.
Gable.
Thank you so much. Well, you know, we want to invite listeners to the website for DeVia, which is www.deafart.org. www.deafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeafdeaf just tell us some of the names of the works that are just out. Well, I know they're all outstanding, but is there some work that you have specifically that you want to talk about?
And this is Takako speaking. You can actually view the winners at www.ksdeaf.org. And you just click on the DeVia icon there on the homepage. That'll take you to the winners. Let me select one. For instance, the Ali Brown winner, the fish. This is a hand shape of an actual fish, like the ASL classifier that deaf people would use for the sign for fish, and she's painted a fish around the hand shape, or the hand is incorporated within the picture of the fish. Mm-hmm. And so that's one piece for a really young student.
Now, is that painting? Is it tempera? Is it watercolor? What is the medium?
It is tempera paint.
Uh-huh.
And it has a wax string that is stuck to the painting, and that is made up of the hand shape.
Very good.
Okay. Let me select another piece here. For a middle school piece of work, first place, this is the one entitled Sleep. What this has is two people sitting side by side, and one person is starting the sign for sleep, and their eyes are open, and then this person next to them is finishing the sign for sleep and is actually falling asleep.
And again, is that painting? Is it sculptural? Is it collage?
It is painting again.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it uses only primary colors, yellow, blue, and red in that painting.
Okay.
I believe the students were studying about the artist Nancy Rourke. And this is an artist, Nancy, that typically uses just primary colors. She has the intention of using those colors for specific reasons. And I think they were studying her art at that time, and then the students made projects based on what they researched. And then another piece, which is an honorable mention, this is actually a student that I taught a unit for. It was abstract painting. And so this student uses tempera paint. And you can see two hands put together with eyeballs on them and then a mouth on it as well, because deaf people communicate with their hands. And so that would represent their mouths. And then their eyes is what they use to hear with. And so their eyes are on their hands as well to complete that loop of communication.
Well, and for our listeners, I just want to reiterate that the DeVia Manifesto, it represents deaf artists and perceptions based on their deaf experiences. It also uses formal art elements with the intention of expressing innate cultural or physical deaf experience. So these experiences may include deaf metaphors, deaf perspectives, and deaf insight and relationship with the environment, both the natural world and deaf cultural environment, spiritual and everyday life. And, you know, the works that I've seen on the website, very colorful and you know, beautiful images using painting and different techniques, maybe some collage and that. So I would encourage you to check out their website. Now, I did find this statement, which I thought was really beautiful, that goes, being deaf isn't a disability, but a different ability. And I think that's just a wonderful statement to have in the culture. Sandy, when people come to the cultural center, is there a connection with the deaf community, or are they just trying to learn and sort of understand the world of deaf culture?
That's a great question. We have a variety of visitors that come through the center. A lot of individuals are deaf themselves, and many of these visitors are from out of state mm-hmm. as well as out of country. We've had a lot of individuals from other countries that have been able to come and visit. I also see individuals who are losing their hearing and are concerned about what they can do. And hopefully we're able to provide them information that will help them with what they're experiencing. We also have school groups that come. A lot of the school groups are, or scout groups, like to come and participate in some of the events that we have for children to gain a better understanding of deaf culture. What's really fun is that probably most of our volunteers are members of the deaf community, so it's a great experience to be able to find that you really can communicate with individuals, even if you don't know the language itself, which is part of what we're trying to do, break down that barrier.
Yeah, it's good to know and educate others about, you know, the world around us, not just what we know. We only have a few minutes left. Is there anything else that we need to bring up? Or I do have to ask you, with this year's contest so successful, do you plans for next year's competition? Is that in the works?
And this is Sherry speaking. Yes, we would definitely want to continue this from year to year. But
absolutely.
I think we might change from photography to 3D or something along the lines of ceramic, because that is offered through K-12 art programming. I don't think that kids at the younger ages are more skilled at photography. So that's one change we would make for next year.
Yeah. Well, I look forward to that. And Kester, when you were on last year, we talked about the ASL. Is that happening this year too?
Yes, the ASL Bowl competition is taking place every year. In fact, we had 4 out of 6 first places at the regional tournament in Minnesota. So we took home 4 out of the 6 first place medals. So we're really proud about
Absolutely.
That.
Absolutely. And that takes place in the fall? Around November or something?
October is the local tournament, and then November is when the regional tournament happens, and this year it's going to be in Oklahoma.
Terrific. Final words, anyone? Well, I tell you, I do want to thank Sandy Kelly, director of the Deaf Cultural Center in Olathe, Sherry Gable, the bilingual assistant ASL tutor and teacher for the Kent School for the Deaf, also to Kako Kearns, who is the Kansas City, Kansas School for the Deaf art teacher, and of course, Kester L. Hornmarsh. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. You will come back
and see
us, right?
Absolutely.
Terrific.
Definitely. Thank you.
Very good. We're going to take a real quick break, and we'll be right back with ArtSpeak Radio.
J'aimerais mieux dire que c'est mon
And you're listening to Art Speak Radio on 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. This is Maria Vasquez Boyd, and welcome you to Art Speak Radio. Hope you're listening online at KKFI.org, or you can listen on your phone, on your radio app, on your smartphone. You can even tune us in at 90.1. What do you think about that, Patrick?
I think it's fantastic.
And my next guest is Patrick Dobson, who's a writer, a college professor, and union iron worker in Kansas City, Missouri. His second book, Canoeing the Great Plains and Missouri River Summer, is out. It's been published. It just came out. It's right off the conveyor belt. His first book, Seldom Seen, A Journey into the Great Plains, was published with very critical acclaim in 2009. Recently, Patrick earned a doctorate in history and American literature at the University of Missouri, Kansas City, in 2013. Now, I do want to let listeners know that Patrick will talk about his new book, not only today, but he'll talk about Canoeing the Great Plains in Missouri River Summer, the title of his book, tomorrow night, May 7th, at 6:30 at the Plaza Branch of the Kansas City Public Library. Welcome, my friend.
Thanks, Maria. I appreciate it.
Terrific. So, you know what? This is your second book. Was that tough? Was that a tough act to follow?
Well, it's always, you know, the magic for me is in the revision, and so it took a long time to make sure that this was not just decently written, but a piece of literature, if not a piece of art.
Mm-hmm. You know, for our listeners who are not familiar with Seldom Seen, let's just give a little snippet about that book.
Yeah, it's about a walk I made in 1995 from Gillum Park in Kansas City to Helena, Montana. And the book is not just about that walk, but also the inner journey I was making at the time.
And there was something in your life that sort of provoked that.
It was just routine. It was I felt trapped in a regular routine. I was just 5 years sober and still trying to figure, you know, still mm-hmm. trying to get my feet underneath me. Mm-hmm. And it seemed that I had been locked into just regular jobs that weren't really going to take me anywhere.
Yeah.
And so I really wanted something to change, and I really wanted a challenge as well mm-hmm. as something to write about.
It took a lot of courage.
Well, thanks very much.
It really did.
Yeah, I was fearful the whole time. So,
but now, you know, years later and all, just sort of reflecting, looking back, would you do it all over again?
I'd do it right now if I could. Right now, though, I'm pretty much a father and have my responsibilities at home.
Yeah. But, you know, people may ask, well, why not just, you know, why walk? Why not just go on a cruise or travel to Europe or something? Why walk across, you know?
Well, when I was a kid, we went on family vacations to Colorado, and my dad drove as fast as he could across Kansas because he thought it was the most boring place in the world. And I, looking out of the back window of that station wagon, found that it was something very much different. And then when I went to the University of when I was at the University of Wyoming, 1991 through 1993, I made the drive from Kansas City through Nebraska to Wyoming something like 23 times.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wanted to experience what it was like without a car. And mm-hmm. of course, it's a very much different kind of experience when you're not looking at it through a car window, when you're out there in the middle of all that space by yourself.
So now we fast forward your second novel. Let's talk about that.
It's a travel memoir. It's not really a novel. A novel indicates fiction, so it's a travel memoir.
That's true.
And it's about the canoe trip that I took home from Helena, Montana, to Kansas City on the Missouri River. And in that narrative, of course, you get a good idea of the things that I was going through and the things I was searching for.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But there's also a good bit of perspective on, you know, looking back over the years and what that trip has done for me.
Mm-hmm. Canoeing the Great Plains in Missouri River Summer. At some point, coming back by canoe, did you ever just think, just for a minute, and this is just you and me, you can be honest here, did you ever think of just pitching the canoe and hopping on a bus and saying,
Never not once. It's like once I started, and even though I was fearful and it got very difficult at times, I never really thought about jumping on a bus and coming home. I mean, it really did become difficult, especially on the big lakes on the Missouri. And
because your experience with canoeing was fairly limited, right?
Well, fairly limited to none at all. Let's put it that way. I think I had a drunken weekend 15 or so years before I took off. And of course, I started drinking on Friday and have no idea really even how I got home. That weekend. So that was the whole of my canoeing experience before I got on the river.
So there was a lot of trial by error and just kind of winging it.
Well, I had a very short and contentious lesson on a Helena City Lake by this guy who really was like a perfect physical specimen and a noted whitewater canoeist up in Helena. And he gave me this really sort of yelled at me and couldn't understand how come I couldn't get what he was trying to say and so on and so on. I was very inept. And then at the end of that lesson, after I was thoroughly humiliated, I asked him if he'd ever been on the Missouri River. And he said, no, it was too dangerous for him.
Wow.
And so here I was getting into the water, really. And I was, and it was just, like I said, after that lesson, the humiliation was complete. And then I walked away really with no hope. But I went ahead and got on the river anyway.
And then the journey was how long?
It took me 2.5 months to get from Helena to Kansas City.
Yeah. And that's during, but what part of the year was
it? It was summertime. I took off on July 15th. And took 2.5 months later, then arrived in Kansas City. And it was really tough. It was the windiest part of the year. Really, I had to deal with frightful lightning storms when I was in the middle of the river that came up very suddenly.
I can imagine.
Getting blown back by the wind. There was a period of 10 days when I didn't talk to another human being. I didn't see anybody. And that kind of drives me crazy.
Yeah, because you're very social, but then it allows, you know, some very meditative
experiences,
really, too.
You really have this opportunity, or at least I had this opportunity, to look inside and try to get to know myself. Because, like I said, I was really not, I wasn't really self-aware at that time. And it really took, it really allowed me to look inside, find out who I was, find more of myself.
And it really was so very different from walking up there.
Yes,
because
it was.
You met so many people along the way.
Yeah. Well, along the way of to Helena, there was lots of people. Of course, I was right on the road. People would stop and ask me if I wanted a ride or to stay on their couch or stay in their yard, whatever it was. On the canoe trip home, I did meet some people, mostly at riverside parks or sometimes fishermen on the river or anglers, I should say, because some were women. But there were a whole lot fewer people. I was on my own a whole lot more. Now, I did meet a very nice guy in Omaha who was having a real terrible trip on the river. He had tried to do the same thing I did. And he was ready to give it up and go back to St. Louis. And I talked him into canoeing together for a couple of days just to give it a chance. And we wound up coming all the way back to Kansas City together. And then he went on to St. Louis. He didn't get off the river. But it was great. It was like a perfect 2 weeks. We lived like Huck Finns. We shot rifles and didn't put on our shoes. And
you keep in contact with him?
Yes, he's a good friend of mine today. I just actually had a text back and forth with him yesterday.
Terrific. You know what, Patrick? We're going to take a real quick break. And for our listeners out there, I've got some underwriting that I'm going to play. But I also have a terrific copy of Seldom Seen that will give to the third caller when I go to break here. If you call 816-931-5534, the third caller, I'll give you Patrick Dobson's Seldom Seen. We'll be right back.
Last week, AT&T reported massive profits, but 17,000 workers in the Midwest who helped make them rich are working without a contract and facing demands for slashed health care, pensions, and job security protections. Find out about how they're mobilizing this week on the Heartland Labor Forum. Then, why are home care workers demonstrating against the whole person? Why do they want a union? All that Thursday at 6 p.m., broadcast Friday, 5 a.m.
Gerald Trimble, viola da gamba. Surtur Tunkton, percussion. Benjamin Warner, seven-string guitar. And Michael Turnbow, five-string violin. On the local showcase, Thursday at 8 p.m.
You're listening to Art Speak Radio. I'm Maria Vasquez Boyd, talking to the wonderful, talented, and well, you kind of smell good, Patrick Dobson.
Thank you.
He's talking about his latest book, Canoeing the Great Plains, A Missouri River Summer. He'll be talking at the Plaza Branch of the Kansas City Public Library tomorrow at 6:30. He'll be talking about that book. And I do want to say congratulations to Phil, who won the Seldom Seen book, your first book.
Yes, thanks very much, Phil, for calling in.
Yeah.
Appreciate it.
So now we're at the second book, and we're talking about the journey home. Again, I want to ask you, would you do anything differently coming back?
Well, if I had to do it again, I would first try to actually get some canoeing experience before I got on the river. Because it was pretty frightful, especially in the beginning when I encountered river rapids that weren't whitewater rapids, but they were fairly large steps down in the river, as well as being on the river during lightning storms and hail and so on and so
That's going to be crazy.
Yeah, and... But otherwise, because the trip was so formative for me, it's hard for me to even imagine going back and not doing it again.
Mm-hmm. Have you been canoeing since?
Oh, yeah, plenty. yeah, I canoe on the Missouri River. Actually, the Missouri River is the only river I've ever canoed on outside of a drunken experience 15 years before. So that's, you know, overnights, weekends, and I've even canoed from Kansas City to St. Louis.
Well, I've done some canoeing in my time, but nothing that spectacular, just mostly southern Missouri rivers.
Well,
and
the Missouri is a really beautiful river to be on. It is a big, wide river, and it would seem really scary, but once you're out in there, it makes you feel small. And it makes you feel insignificant, which sounds very negative, but in fact, it's not. It really breeds a kind of humility.
Mm-hmm.
And plus, you could be going through the middle of cities like Omaha and Kansas City and really still feel 1,000 miles away because the river gives you that experience.
Mm-hmm.
You really get the idea that no one's looking. Nobody's paying attention to what you're doing out there.
So, Patrick, as I mentioned to our listeners, that you're going to be talking at the Kansas City Public Library tomorrow at the Plaza Branch. So I know Henry
Ford. Oh, and I have pictures, too, really spectacular pictures that'll go with that presentation.
Oh, great. Good. I know that you're good friends, as well as I am, with Henry Fortunato, who's at the Kansas City
Public Library.
Yes,
fantastic guy.
He's a walker.
Yeah, I've seen his presentation as well.
So are there plans for y'all to collaborate and go do something crazy, go wild walking across
the
country together?
Well, we have a collaborative project that we're putting together now, but there's nothing as spectacular as walking across Kansas like he did, or across Nebraska and up into Wyoming like I did.
Mutual admiration for each other, right?
Yes, I took a 10-mile hike with Henry a couple of weeks ago, and he really can put on some speed. He's a good walker.
Yeah. You know, I do want to tell our listeners, if you want to gain more information about Patrick, you can go to patrickdobson.com. And for more information about the appearance tomorrow at the library, kclibrary.org. And I believe you have a blog, too, yeah?
Well, it's patrickdobson.com. It's my blog.
Okay.
And so I have the events listed there, but I also have... I've kept a blog for, I think, since 2009, and they're mostly essays of about 1,000 words.
So when
I don't know if anybody ever reads them, but it's something that I find very fulfilling.
You know, with the expectation of people who have read the first book and the second, are they looking for a third? Do you think that expectation of, okay, like I had said earlier, what's next?
Well, what's next is I have a little book called Trout Stories that I'm finishing up right now, and I'm also drafting a fourth book that has to do with my experiences in Europe when I was younger, as well as through the years, because I still have very good friends there, and we just visited them last summer.
What was the draw in Europe? Just meeting different people, or
history? It was another time in my life when I didn't think my life was really going anywhere. Yeah. And I was younger and drunker at the time. So going to Europe just sounded like a great idea.
Well, I do want to thank you because you had participated in a Valentine program that I did here.
Oh, yeah.
When
it was
fun.
It was really great.
Yeah. It was mi amor, you know, stories of love or not. And so you contributed a story about that. So it's something that you had talked about, that you had written about from a younger Patrick.
Uh-huh.
And so we were able to put that story on air.
With the perspective of years. I think that's important. You know, here's the things that happened.
Yeah.
And then here's how they affected me over the long term.
You know, because if we all wrote books at different stages of our life, we'd have a full set of encyclopedias. I mean, because there's so many facets to who we are.
You know, some people say that if you don't have anything to write about, you write about yourself. And I kind of look at it as these are the experiences that I have.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a fiction writer. And so it's more of a Frida Kahlo approach to writing, where, you know, Frida, most of her work or a great body of her work had to do with her own self-portrait.
Absolutely.
Over time. And those change. Those tell different stories as we move forward.
But it's not an egotistical sort of experience.
No, I
think, again, it just sort of allows people to see other facets of an individual.
Well, not just the individual, but also themselves, I think.
The worldview.
When it's about, a lot of this stuff is about growth, about seeking, about loss, about spirituality. And all of us have those experiences. And I think that as people read this, they're not just learning about what seems to be a great adventure at one time, but also about themselves, or at least I hope so.
Absolutely. We're going to take a real quick break, and I'll be right back with Patrick Dobson.
Hi, I'm Michael Hoag. Monday on the Arts Magazine Show, originally developed through a workshop with Casey Rep and the Living Room Theater, it's a rock and theater fusion which revolves around a drug-fueled trailer park in Stillwater, Oklahoma. It's called Stillwater, and we'll talk about it Monday at noon on the Arts Magazine Show.
And we're back. This is Art Speak Radio. I'm Maria Vasquez Boyd and Patrick. So do you have any advice or any sort of that's a little
advice,
scary to ask.
Yeah,
well, number one, for people who write, people that are thinking about traveling or maybe pulling a stunt like yours. And I don't mean stunt, but, you know,
right.
sort
well,
of an experience like yours.
The one thing that I have to say about both the walk and the canoe trip is I set out to do something that I thought really anybody could do if they put their mind to it. And I think that's really the message that comes through in much yeah. of my writing is just persistence and hard work. I mean, I don't see myself as having many talents or skills, but I do have the ability to work hard and persevere.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's what really brings me through these journeys that you read about, as well as just everyday life. So if I was going to tell a writer what to do, I would say, don't listen to what anybody else says because they're going to tell you you can't do it. Don't listen to your critics because they're going to tell you everything you do is wrong. Instead, try to be a good writer. Make sure that you sit down and work hard and persevere. Do writing every day if you can. Don't get out of practice with it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that I've had to learn. It's a discipline that I have to put together myself.
Mm-hmm.
And there are days when I sit in front of the computer for 4 or 5 hours and not come up with anything. But it's the discipline of sitting down every day at a particular hour or between a particular hour and working for 3 to 4 hours to make sure that something gets written. And like I said, if you go, it's like that old saying, if you go to the barber shop enough, you're going to get a haircut. If you sit down in front of your computer or with your pen and your paper often enough and long enough, you're going to get something written.
Terrific. Well, I do want to thank you, my friend, Patrick Dobson.
Thanks, Maria. I really appreciate being here.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. Again, his new book is Canoeing the Great Plains, a Missouri River Summer. Plaza branch of the Kansas City Public Library. He'll be there at 6:30 tomorrow night. And again, for more information, go to kclibrary.org and patrickdobson.com. Thank you again. Hey, when you're on your third or fourth or fifth or however many books, you come back, okay?
I'll do it. Thank you very much, Maria.
Excellent. I do want to let our listeners know that you're listening to KK 90.1 FM, KKFY, Kansas City Community Radio. Stay tuned for Afternoon Jazz with Jeff Harshbarger. At 3 p.m., we have Old G's Hangout with Groovy Grant. 6 p.m., Interfaith Voices. Then at 7 p.m. is American Roots. At 9 o'clock, we have Classical Challenge with Dr. Mike and or Mark Andrus. So next week on Art Speak Radio, we'll be talking to artist gallery owner Dan Free. And we also have poet, writer Jameson Bales, who will join us in the studio. That's May 13th, next Wednesday. And we might even have some Making Movies people. We'll just have to wait and see. But I want to thank all my guests that joined me today. Kester L. Hornmarsh, Sandy Kelly, Sherry Gable, Takako Kearns from the Kansas School of the Deaf and the Deaf Cultural Center. I also want to thank Rick Groom, who provided live stream video for our guests from the Kansas School for the Deaf. Thank you so very much, Rick Groom. And, of course, I want to thank my friend Patrick Dobson. Thank you.
Thank you, Maria.
Welcome anytime, my friend. This is Maria Vasquez Boyd. Thank you for listening to Art Speak Radio. Honey, I'm coming home.
You're listening to 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.